Someday, you will be old enough to start reading fairy tales again. C.S. Lewis. The Dragon Pod from Bending Not Breaking. Book 6. Stars. Chapter 1. Star Touched. Welcome back to our first episode of Season 6, covering the Dragon Prince and the Mystery of Erebos. This is the Dragon Pod. Thank you all so much for listening. I am really excited to dive back into the Dragon Prince. It feels like it's been a while, and now I'm just excited to be back in this universe and talking about this show, because it is amazing. I had my jaw dropped multiple times throughout this season, so I was really excited to start coordinating with all of our guests. And today we are very lucky to have an incredible guest, and so I had the pleasure of introducing, or should I say reintroducing, Vilas Spangsberg. And he is back on the pod, award-winning Danish director, and he is joining us today from Denmark, which is a big deal. He is a producer and best known for his work with our favorite Emmy-winning Netflix original, The Dragon Prince. And he has directed multiple media over the past 15 years and is well known and feared for his passionate hands-on approach and multidisciplinary skill set. Vilas, welcome back to the Dragon Pod. How are you today?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh, it's great to be back. I had a blast last time. It was a very pleasant experience. I think we went into great discussions of, I hadn't expected at all on this podcast to go into these, and it was very emotional last time, and I think it was some very thoughtful questions you had, and I'm always excited to be back here. And we have season 6 just came out a few weeks ago, and the response has been pretty amazing. We were number one in kids and family for, I think it's full week, almost 5 days.
Yeah.
Not just in Denmark, but also in the US and in Thailand and Brazil and many places. And seeing that response in the community, the very positive feedback has been, heartwarming. And of course, that is because we had 220 people who did a lot of hard work to make this story come to life on screen. And of course, a very well-written season by the writing team, and of course Aaron and Justin as well. So it was a pleasure to produce and help direct season 6. I'm yet to actually watch it on Netflix myself. I usually don't. I spot all the mistakes and I'm like, oh, that could have been better. Oh no, Rayla is missing her horns. How did nobody watch that? But this time around, I'm actually a little bit more, I'm getting ready to watch season 6, and I might, try and convince my wife and kids to watch it. I don't know about the kids, they're a little young. I might stop, I have no spoilers, but halfway through, it gets a little serious. So, I believe we're going to talk about the first episode. So,
yeah. Amazing. That's so cool. And it's always interesting to hear everybody's relationships with watching the show. Like, I know that a lot of the voice actors like binge it once, as soon as it comes out. But then I also know in my work with Avatar and The Last Airbender, like, many of the voice actors have never once seen the show, and it just is like a work thing to them. And it's like, how is this possible? And so it's just so interesting to kind of hear everybody's relationship. So thanks for sharing that. I'm curious, we've heard from you before, and we're hearing about like the release of season 6 and things along those lines and how big that has been, but tell me about like how your relationship with the show has kind of evolved since we've talked last. I'm curious if there are, you've had new experiences or new evolutions in your relationship with the show.
That's a good question. Every time a new season comes out, you're a little bit sort of like on the edge of the chair. Is this going to land well with the core audience, like the core fans? Because at the end of the day, you know, we sort of like, you know, we make a show for ourselves, but we also really make a show for the core fan group. This, you know, the writers, of course, want to tell a very unique story, and they try and write something that is, you know, comes together organically. And I'm a little bit sort of from the outside in. I throw ideas into the pot, you know, and sometimes it sticks, and it's always exciting to get the first drafts and start reading them. And now that, you know, this is the sixth season, I've been lucky enough and fortunate to be part of every single season of this show since the very first. And I, you know, just to recap for everybody, I directed the first three seasons in Vancouver. And then I was lucky enough to be asked to show run and produce the, you know, the new installment, the season 4, 5, 6, and 7. So, you know, my role sort of shifted a little bit. I've been producing a bit more than I've been directing. Producing is very much about sort of like enabling other people to lift and to be creative. So it doesn't mean I've been taking the back seat, but I definitely, you know, sort of did my best to not step on any toes and try and get new, fresh voices in there and fresh ideas. And it's also why, you know, season 4 and 5 looked a little different to 1, 2, and 3, because 1, 2, and 3, I was very, very hands-on with how I wanted to shoot it and light it and all that. And you just have to, like, we'll get to this, but you have to sort of grow up and step up a little bit and let other people, you know, take over and try and hand over some of the knowledge and some of the scar tissue that you gained of the first three seasons, so the new team doesn't make the same mistakes. They will make their own mistakes, you know, and that's, you know, each season sort of builds on the previous season, and sometimes that also means that it's going to be more like bigger in scale. You know, we have some big crowd scenes and big fights in season 7. We have a lot of fire effects and destruction happening. And again, you have to do a lot of this on TV budget. You know, this was all done remote as well. So, you know, so I think that was sort of like the big change for me. It was sort of like learning to take a step back and let somebody else, you know, pull forward.
That's so big. And, you know, you created the perfect segue, so I'm gonna take it. Like, you talked about how you have had to kind of grow up, right? Of how this has given you this sense of like release almost, and letting a little bit of letting go, but also like learning and developing your own skills in a different way and kind of watching people take the mantle. And that's a really nice thing. And one of the lens you chose for today kind of has been about growing up and what it means to grow up. And like, as we watch this episode, looking at it through a lens of quote growing up. And so I'm curious, what does that mean to you? What is growing up exactly?
I look at it as one of the pillars of, you know, great character storytelling. It's always been a central part of the storytelling in The Dragon Prince. There's always been characters who had to grow up faster than was necessarily healthy. Yeah. You know, we have Isran becoming a young king very early under fairly traumatic circumstances. In this episode, the first episode of season 6, we have, you know, Claudia, who's just sort of, you know, brought her dad back from the dead by doing something, again, very terrible and traumatic. And then he leaves. I don't know if there's a spoiler warning here, but because we spoiler now, spoilers.
Everything's okay. Out. We're expecting.
Yeah, so Viren is alive. And Viren is going to Viren makes a hard decision. Because he's, you know, in reality, I don't think there's a one sort of black and white point of where we are now grown up. Like, you're growing up constantly throughout life, right? I don't know. That's at least how I see it. And Viren actually sort of grows up a little bit in this episode, because he realizes he has to go and face his, you know, some justice back in Catullus. And Claudia is heartbroken about this. Claudia realizes for her to move on, she has to leave Terry, and she leaves Terry. You know, there's all this like splitting up. While at the same time back home in Catullus, it's a little bit the calm before the storm. Even though when you look at Esrin's face, when Callum and Rayla rides off into the sunset, you know, you can tell that Esrin does some melancholy, like there's some emotion there. He can sort of sense something, right? That's like growing up has always been a big part of the show, and I think we constantly find new ways of looking at this part of life. And you know, I think you mentioned this a little earlier, like learning to let go of the past is also a big part of growing up.
I mean, that reminds me of so many things. Like there's so much to this. I love this element of you grow up constantly. It's not something you reach, right? Mm. It's this new constant evolution of the way you framed it was really interesting. Was like there's this constant mixture of growing up being what leads us to separate, right, and go our own way, so to speak. But it's also this element of coming home, right, to ourselves. Yep. Like this Viren says, I have to go to Catullus. There's this element of I have to go home. And in the same way, he's returning to himself in a way that he feels like. So there's this element of like, I'm going off to college and I'm growing up and I'm going my own way and getting my independence. Mm. But then there's this other piece of like coming home, which is so interesting to kind of think about. That's awesome. I can't wait to dive into some of these moments that you've kind of lifted up, because they're going to be big. But before we do, I want to take on the segment of what is called the primal source for our new listeners, if you're listening for the first time, where we have a primal source, so to speak, right here with us today. And I would love for you, if possible, to kind of give us any sort of firsthand accounts or firsthand knowledge about the making of the episode, the behind the scenes, so to speak. And so I'm curious, was in the making of the episode and the writing of it and the production of it, is there something interesting or fun about creating this episode that you remember, or fondly or otherwise?
Yeah, like it's a little interesting, because I think when I was sort of looking at the season arc, we knew that we were gonna, again, this is a spoiler, but we were gonna burn down Catullus. Again, back to sort of like that's the childhood home of Esrin and Callum and Claudia. This is where they grew up. We are literally, you know, getting rid of their past. We're burning it. We're destroying it. So I wanted to start the show there, right? You know, and have it be a warm, fuzzy, nice place to be.
Yeah.
Because then I feel even more horrible when we burn it to the ground. That was sort of my intention. So that's why, you know, that whole segment is sort of like, you know, they have the pearl and it's like, holy you know, Aravos is in there.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying. But if you look at those scenes, it's very relaxed. And, you know, Sharon is making a great joke. I don't remember which writer came up with that, but I love it, with, you know, throwing it into a volcano.
Yep.
It's a great homage. And Opelli being blindfolded and all that, you know, again, the actors did a great, Jesse did a hilarious job with the knocking on the door and all that. I think he did ad-libbed quite a bit of that. We were crying of laughter in the studio. And so it was definitely sort of like, even though 4, 5, 6 have been made sort of like right after each other with no real break, it still felt a little bit like the beginning, maybe the end, you know. You know, we have 7 seasons. The first 3 were very much a trilogy. We always intended that. I would maybe argue this is tricky, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, to sort of group the other four. Seven is a little bit of a standalone, I guess, but I would say that six and seven is somewhat connected, as we're leaving on a fairly big cliffhanger at the end. So it was that sort of feeling of like the beginning of the end, and it had to feel like a place you wanted to go. It's a place you want to hang out. So we sort of slippery slope into a fairly serious season.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was quite a drastic shift from the beginning to the end. So I think you nailed it on that front. Cool. I'm really excited to kind of dive in. This is really fun, and I'm excited. So let's do it. But before we really dive in, we have to remind our listeners what happens in the episode. And so this is time for our famous 30-second recap, where we do our best to recap what happens in the episode in 30 seconds each. So we are going to take this on. And I'm curious, would you like to go first or second?
I really messed this up last time, but I will try my best again to mess it up. So I guess I can go first, then you can do the proper introduction afterwards. Yeah, I'll recap.
All right. So are you ready?
Sure.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Episode opens. Viren is alive. Claudia is barely alive. The pearl is in Catullus. Shock. Opelli is very annoyed. Big shocker as well. Sim is really sad. He misses his mama. Callum has a blankie and a great idea. And Perry cries a ton, reaching out towards his, you know, his love. And Claudia leaves. The end.
That's it. Yeah, done. Nailed it. Yeah, awesome. Okay. I'm going to put 30 seconds back on the clock, and will you count down for me?
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so yeah, Viren's alive. Oh my goodness. And then Terry is like, oh my God, Viren. And then Viren is like, ethics, and leaves Claudia in a sad, sad place. And then there's this secret meeting that's also not so secret. And then, like, do they destroy the pearl? Do they not destroy the pearl? That is the question. They choose secrets. And then Zim misses Mummy. And then Callum wants to go north and destroy the pearl. And then Callum's like a dreamy, dreamy boy, and he pulled shenanigans and then goes to Barius with candy. And then Annie's magic blanket. And then Claudia leaves Terry in a scary place, and that's scary. Okay, that was 30 seconds. That's we did our best.
You don't need to watch the episode now. You can skip straight to 602.
There it is. Yeah, everybody, you heard it from on Primal
Sword. As long as I get my credit, I'm all good. Yeah,
you heard it. So great. That gives us all the ammunition we need to move forward into this next segment and take shots at what we think are moments of growing up. And so you've already highlighted a few kind of in our introduction, but I'm curious if there's a moment you would like to go to first, where you saw growing up in the episode.
I'm trying not to sound like a broken record, but it's the, you know, I mentioned Esrin having to grow up fast. For me, a little bit, you know, Claudia is still hanging on. She's not really letting go. You know, even towards the end of the season, like, she's not letting go. But here at the beginning, you know, the fact that she can't lift herself up in the helicopter and sort of out of the mud and understand what her father is talking about is showing that she's still a child to me, you know. I think the beach and the performance of Raquel, the actor, is the standout moment in this episode. You know, when we screened the episode a few times, to like sort of get the audience reaction a little bit, and sort of like, you know, not that we could change that much when we were after screening it, but it was mostly sort of get an idea of like where this season would land and how to sort of, you know, work forward. And when we screened that episode with Claudia screaming, you know, and crying, really awkward crying. people crying in the audience. Like, it was hard not to sit there and be a little emotional yourself. So that, yeah, standout moment in the episode, and I think a standout moment in the show, you know.
Wild. Like, truly, I wrote this in my notes. Like, Claudia's appearance and mental state are so wild in this episode. Like, just goodness, this, especially in the end when she's hovering over Terry's face and he wakes up to see them, and it's just, it is what an emotional roller coaster this puts us on. And it really is incredible. And I think it's really interesting to hear you point out that Claudia hasn't quite gotten there yet. She has not grown up. And then I think if you were to frame this differently, I would say she might be someone who has grown up so much over the course of the seasons, right? Over the course of the series, right? She has been forced to grow up in a way that she never should have had to. But in a way, I think it's like this partial growth where part of her has grown up and it has outpaced other parts of her. And it's interesting, right? Because some might say that she is too grown up, but the other part of me is like, you're right. There's this lack of embrace for change. She is so unwilling to let things change. And I think that's kind of what growing up is. It's a form of change, right? I'm willing to release something in order to get to something else. And
now that I'm sort of reflecting on it, it's sort of like, it's more like growing. Growing up sounds final. It's more like she's growing and she's chosen a path a little bit, you know. She's, and again, a lot of abuse is sort of have pushed her down that path, right? And some of choices have pushed her down that path as well. She's not completely innocent, but at the same time, a lot of things have happened. Like, she's trying to, you know, I think she's following her heart for sure. Sorry, that's just a motorcycle in the background here. It's still summer in the park, so
yeah, it's wild. I think it's super interesting to think about Claudia as just a little case study on what growing up can look like in terms of, I think it's always interesting when we are thinking in absolutes, and it's this more than anything shows us that growing up is in pieces, and that rather are like, we ourselves, human beings, are very complex, right? That we have pieces of us that can grow and pieces of us that can feel stunted. And I think that's something that we often forget. We think of like people holistically. And I think that we might be more empathetic towards one another if we were to realize that we're more complex than that, it seems.
Oh, 100%. I think, you know, again, back to the sort of like the trauma, like, she had her mother leave her at a very early age. Yeah. And I think she got overly attached to her father because of that sort of loss of a parent. And, you know, so she has a little bit of a daddy issue, because you see that later in the season, the second Viren is gone, she, you know, pretty quickly, you know, picks a new daddy a little bit. And I'm sure people will disagree a little bit, but at least when I was sort of like looking at the scripts and helping with the boards and the direction, I felt when we took that sort of turn, I guess in 6 or 9, I guess, I'm trying to remember which episode, when she finds the pearl in Catullus. I know you're gonna probably talk to somebody else about that episode, but you know, I sort of wanted to feel pretty terrible. Yeah. You know, she's just lost her only parent that we know of, and right away at the most, you know, when she's the most down and she's the most, you know, sad, and Aralas just sneaks, he slides right in. So anyway, yeah. I think again, a little bit back to like same idea with the castle. We had that, you know, we wanted to be really impactful when Vierna leaves her to show, you know, that it, there's an open wound there and she's not capable of really dealing with that loss. And showing that she's a wounded character in that sense. And those are dangerous, right? Because, you know, that sadness can lead to anger, and that anger can lead to hate, as somebody said. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's so tragic because it's adding, like, in a way, it's adding insult to injury, right? Because she's literally injured. She just had her leg, like, cut off. Yeah. And she is limping. She is, like, dragging herself on this beach because she is disabled in a new way. And then we see that the amount of love that Viren has for her is very interesting, because there's no way he would have walked away in earlier seasons. There's no way he would have been able to. He would have seen her in that much pain and done everything he could to mitigate it. And you mentioned this earlier, so I want to kind of shift it a little bit to Viren, right? This idea of Viren still growing up in a way. And it has taken him dying twice to get to the point where he is able to do this. Like, to think about how, like, the phrase is, like, you don't know how to move forward for some people until you've hit rock bottom. And I think that it's interesting because Viren had to hit rock bottom twice to be able to get to the point where he is in this episode. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are on this ability to leave your child literally covered in blood, lying in the sand, and to think that you're doing the right thing.
So it's interesting because, like, I think he has a moment of clarity where he realizes that he's also pushing his own daughter down a very dark path.
Yeah.
So him leaving is actually not so much for his own redemption as it's for to set her free a little bit. You know, I think it's, and that must be insanely hard. And I don't see many parents come to this conclusion, you know, because hopefully you're there to help your offspring, you know, to not make the same mistakes as you made. But I think he sort of realizes that he's really, you know, he's screwed up quite a bit here, and she's almost better off on her own because he has to go and find his truth. Like, I could be wrong, but that's a little bit how maybe I'm seeing it.
No, I agree with you, because it's so fascinating to think about, because, you know, one of the stories I turn to often is, you know, when people make mistakes, especially with children, right? Like, let's say a child makes a mistake and they are eating cereal and they spill milk all over the ground. Most of the time, the parent is going to be like, oh, honey, it's okay. We spill things. We spill things all the time. And the kid will feel good about it. But if that same parent is making brownies later and spills brownie batter on the ground, and then they respond by saying, oh, I'm such an idiot, I'm the worst, the kid is also going to see that. And they're going to, what's going to land more for that child, what the parent said about them or what they say to themselves? And what Viren is suggesting in this episode is that what the parent says and does themselves and models matters more than what we tell our kids. And Viren has taken 6 seasons and a whole lifetime for him to come to this conclusion. But there are many of us who never come to that conclusion. And I think that what he's saying is that it's gotten to the point where I can no longer teach you with my words. I have to model what it is. And that's so hard. That's difficult. And that,
like, when he means that you're gonna be executed when you right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That is so difficult to say, I'm going to do what I think is right, even when I think it's going to hurt you.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're totally right.
And it's terrifying because I can imagine so many people like disagreeing here. And it's very interesting to think about. Like, so I don't know, like, it just feels like growing up in this instance feels like making really tough choices for not only yourself, but for the people you love and care about. And I don't want to be put in that situation.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, again, back to growing up, like, you know, when you, I think that's maybe a good, you know, when you reach that stage where you put other people's well-being, especially your children, before yourself, you know, I guess most parents will do that pretty quickly, but that's a big step, you know, that's a boss level 40 right there. And maybe Bjorn hasn't quite, you know, done that. Maybe he's been a little too occupied with his job himself.
But it's interesting, right? Because Claudia quotes him, right? And says, I'll do anything, however vile, however bad it is, I will do it. And he is very quick to respond by saying, not for your parents. You do that for you, and you do that for the people you care about, not for the people who are supposed to care about you. And I think that's where it clicks for him, that he's been modeling this. He's been showing her that this is what you do. And that's where I think we often preach things, and this is where I can hear the disagreement in my head already, but I think we often preach things like unconditional love and I'm going to do whatever it takes for my child. But when you say that, you are teaching your child that you have to do whatever it takes. And that is going to teach them something. And it looks like, in an extreme, albeit the example here, what Claudia has been doing, right? Modeling exactly what her dad has shown her. And when in actuality, that's not what he wants for her. He wants something different. And so we have to be very careful how we model, not just for our kids, but for each other, what it really means to lean into our values in a way that is going to do what we actually want it to do. And man, is that tough. Like, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying it's counterintuitive, right? Because we want to do everything for our kids, for our loved ones. But at the same time, when we do that, sometimes we teach them things that we don't want them to learn.
100%. Yeah. And I think right now, you know, and I think last time we talked, there was a little bit like this in the world, like that's sort of like, it's good to be a student of history. I strongly believe that, you know, we learn from, you know, again, prior generations' mistakes and, you know, successes, but, and we can sort of like, again, look at our ancestors and our parents and grandparents and some choices they made. And, you know, and again, like some parts of the world is a lot of trouble right now. And it's sort of like this generational hate that's sort of taken on by the younger generation, and it's like a never-ending spiral of just, you know, very sad, traumatic, you know, events. And I would love to think that there's a way to, you know, like do the Viren, you know, like don't teach your kids to hate the neighbor because that's why I said, right? You know, because I realized that I was wrong, you know, and I'll go and find and see my, you know, my truth and get my punishment. But that doesn't mean that you need to feel anger or sadness. You're free. It's your own life. You know, I'm going to take the staff, so you can't make too many mistakes. But still, you know, right? Is that sort of freedom? He's setting her free. He's letting go. And she's not. She's hanging on. So I think that's very interesting. And I would love to think that a lot of humanity would benefit from watching The Dragon Prince on Netflix. July 26th.
I mean, that's the reason this podcast exists, right? I like that's we believe on this podcast that we can learn from it, and that's why this conversation is happening at all. So I agree with you, huh? Shocker.
I'm not sure. I'm sure not everybody agrees with what we are discussing. And that's the thing, like, you know, everybody can watch the show and have their own you know, version of what we've been talking about. Like, I don't think there's any right or wrong. Of course, when the writers and the actors and the animators, they all put some truth, their own truth and their own version of a story on screen. Yeah. And it always gets modulated a little bit. But I'm always like very open to interpretations, and I'm never telling anybody. When people are asking me, like, did he do it because of that, you know, and I'm like, maybe that's up to you to sort of decide. Like, it's written up to me to decide, and it's that's, you know, sort of like the magic of storytelling is that, you know, yeah, we can get into extreme details and give you a lot of exposition if you wanted to, but it's finding that balance where it's still open for your brain to sort of fill out the blanks, right, a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. I think that's huge. Man, so we've taken Viren and Claudia big time. I'm wondering if it's worth shifting over to the Dragang for a hot minute and talking about moments with them where we've seen growing as well. I will kind of go to Callum first, if I can. And Callum's really interesting in this episode, right? Because we see this element of dream state Callum where he is potentially being controlled by Erebos, but also might not be. And like it's unclear, right? The writing left it unclear. And as you said, like, people can come to their own conclusions around how, why, and what is happening here. But what we see from Callum is this fear driving his motivation. And he says, we have to destroy the pearl. And you can tell it's because he is nervous or scared or fearful, whatever word makes the most sense for the viewer, that he is going to be taking control. And again, earlier seasons and later this season, he's like, Rayla, make sure you kill me if you see me getting taken control of. There's this element of him being in a place where he feels like he cannot grow because he is being held back by the fear of what might happen. And I'm just curious how that lands for you. Does that feel like a possible interpretation, or do you see this moment differently or this episode differently for him?
It's a great observation. I think the fear of, I think he has a little bit of that sort of like, I'm endangering the mission, you know, because he's feeling that sort of like magnetic, you know, traction from the pearl, from Erebos. He's already had his hands a little dirty. So yeah, he's a little shell-shocked still, I think. But he's Callum. He sort of shakes it off, you know, his boyish way. And, you know, maybe he makes a mistake, you know, who knows? Like, maybe the volcano, maybe Sharon was right. Maybe they should just have thrown it into a volcano. Yeah. No, but it's like, and you know, it's actually to Callum's defense, you know, Esran sort of overrules all of them and makes the decision because he's the king. Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's sort of like that, when you are scared or when you're insecure, it's usually a bad time to make any big decisions in life.
You're here. Yeah, well, and this is, I don't know if this speaks to Ezrin or if this speaks to like his trust of Callum or the trust of this group, but the fact that like they know that Callum has been, you know, overtaken by Erebos at least once, right? Mm-hmm. They've seen it happen. And the amount of trust they have for Callum is fascinating because he has like unfettered access to this pearl. There's no other like guard or security around it except for having put it down in this quote hidden chamber. And you know, it is either what feels to me like the idea of a substitute of like a candy situation is a smart move to have a double, but also the fact that Callum has full access to this, knowing he's been tainted, if that's the right word, by or captured or ensnared by Erebos, is either like a lack of care for this situation, or on the other end of the spectrum, total and complete trust for Callum. My instinct tells me that this is the latter, where it is like Ezrin in his youth, right? In you might call it naivete, right? Is so trusting of Callum that this pivotal thing happens with this pearl in this episode. And I'm curious, like, is this an element of growing up here or lack of growing up that Ezrin has so much trust for Callum here? And I don't know, like, it could be an element of, that's kind of like the point of the whole show, right? Is that Ezrin consistently shows us that what some people call naivety is what other people call being a good king. And so I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, because like they sort of make some big decisions, and they might be making those decisions a little fast, and they might make some mistakes, and you know, that's again part of growing up is, you know, having the guts, the gut feeling, and trusting your gut feeling, trusting yourself, trusting the skills of your fellow friends there to make some of these decisions. But you know, you learn from your mistakes, you grow up from, you only learn from mistakes, right? Sort of like so I think this opener, again, this episode, they make some big mistakes that are sort of like revealed a little later in the season, maybe even later seasons as well. And it's sort of like, you know, this again, like, this is a calm before the storm. They don't quite know that, you know, these decisions have some, you know, actions have some reactions, right? I don't know if that answers your question or reflection there, but yeah.
Well, and I think it points to the larger lesson that we are constantly, Ezrin, right? Ezrin constantly chooses love, constantly chooses believing the best in people, constantly chooses what other people are like, you have to grow up. You have to realize that bad things happen in the world, right? And, you know, there's this constant pressure to assume the worst in people rather than assume the best. And I think that is often what happens in real life too, where we're saying you have to begin to like realize that it doesn't always smell like roses and there are thorns and you need to see that. And it comes to bite him in the butt later in this season, right? It's not one of those things where
he spends all his time talking to, you know, Karim about, you know, not fighting his sister, while in the meantime, Erebos is, you know, pulling the strings, turning a dragon towards Catholicism.
And the problem is, Ezrin is doing what Viren does, and we're kind of like, Viren did the right thing. He's choosing goodness, finally. And Ezrin always does that. And in a way, we're like, Viren's finally coming home. He's growing up. He's growing. But Ezrin's already there. And we're saying the opposite. So people say the opposite is needed from Ezrin of like, no, you need to start learning to see the bad in people. Where we're like praising Viren for like, you finally chose the right thing. You're finally doing it. And what we realize is that there's an element of sacrifice that comes with doing the right thing. And Edwin choosing to always prioritize doing what is right to him means that he is always putting things at risk.
Yeah.
And that element of risk is what people are like chewing him out for, but it's also him doing the right thing, even though it's the risky thing. And I don't know that I have a point here, but it feels like there's an element of growing up that is being willing to risk it all for the greater good. But
yeah,
I don't know.
It's a little bit sort of like also realizing that there's probably like no single answer to everything, right?
Yeah.
And you have to sort of like any sort of, you know, very, again, current events, any president has to sort of rule from the middle. And Esmeralda is not, right? You know, he's leaning very hard one way. Yeah. And he needs to sort of, I think if it had he been more grown up, he would have understood, like his father, that sometimes, you know, you can't just lead with your heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, we totally forgot to talk about Soren and Viren. I know it's not this episode, but I think, you know, when Viren comes back, I think it's also one thing is to set Claudia free and let her, you know, pick her own path, because he's definitely pushed her down a wrong path. But it's also, I think, to talk to Soren and try and tell Soren that he's sorry, right? Which is also not easy as a parent. You're sort of like, you're doing your best and you're asking for forgiveness afterwards, and he sort of didn't do quite a good job. And now I don't think he's asking for forgiveness, but he's probably trying to you know, talk to Soren, like one of the reasons why he's going back, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's true for sure. Okay, well, there's a lot going on here that, you know, we could probably talk about this for hours, but rather than continue, we'll leave it on a good note where it's always best to stop before we get to the everything. So I'm going to bring us to a swift end on this segment. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with you, and we can't wait to hear you all tell us about your thoughts on the final two segments. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Thanks for continuing to listen. We have two final segments for you. And per our last season, we started doing a sacred practice at the ends of our episodes. And we are going to continue that tradition. And we're going to introduce one that we have done on the show, but it was a long time ago. And so I want to invite Vilas and you all who are listening to join in this practice. And it is an acronym, but it is called Pardes. And that is an acronym that is essentially stands for four steps in a biblical exegesis process that is from Judaism. And that has been very much adapted for use on the podcast. So this is drawing from the tradition rather than replicating the tradition. And so I'm excited because we talked about this, like we want to learn from the podcast, and we think that it is a path that helps us grow and become, and in other words, helps us grow up. And what we did for this practice is choose a random line from the show. And I literally did a timestamp, and I originally ended up in the credits, and then I backed up a little bit and landed on this quote. And so the quote is, "Dawn is a good time for quests." I'm going to say it one more time. Dawn is a good time for quests. And so the first step in this, in Pardes, is called Pshat. And that stands for the simple meaning of the quote. Like, what is literally happening when we talk about this quote? And so I will go ahead and do this one, Vila, since I know exactly where I pulled it from. And so this is Ezrin speaking. And this is at near the end of the episode, about 6 minutes left. And Ezrin is looking up into the morning sky and is reflecting on the idea of everybody leaving and says this out loud. Dawn is a good time for quests. It's a good time to begin adventures, and is kind of blessing it by noting how this is an auspicious start for everybody taking their separate journeys. And so that's what's literally happening. And the next step is Remez. And so that is translated as, what is the deeper or implied meaning? What is the quote hinting towards? And this is where I'm going to bring you in, Vilas. So as you hear this quote, what is it hinting towards in your brain? Or what is the deeper meaning that comes to you when you think about it? Dawn is a good time for quests.
So I think the deeper meaning, which we can start with, is that's all like, clear your taste buds. You are ready for, you know, the next the next culinary experience, just to stay in that analogy. But like, you know, it's the blank piece of paper. It's the, we have now forgotten everything we know, and we're ready to throw ourselves into the deep end a little bit. Like, it's that morning freshness. You have all your energy. You have slept really well, or at least you've forgotten about the bad dreams. And you're ready to venture, you know, into the horizon again. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, I might be jumping, but like, for me, that moment was very sort of like, it's like fresh, right? It's like a little bit of like, you know, it's like the sun is just coming up, and it's maybe it was raining that night, so you know the water has washed off all the dirt of Catullus castle. So it is literally like sort of like everything is clean and it's ready to get dirty again.
Yeah, well, I love that. I think that's so perfect for this kind of description, because like when I think of dawn, I think of like fresh baked bread. I think of coffee in the morning. I think of like, I'm energized. I'm ready to go. That's what it makes me think of. And so I think that Ezrin's like highlighting this, and it also feels like a blessing almost, like, this is a good time to do this. We're gonna be successful. It's like an optimistic saying as well. To say this out loud is like, I am giving this like all of my good vibes.
I can also tell you that when we did the animatic, I specifically asked the editor to use the Fellowship, Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit theme, you know, one of the main themes of Lord of the Rings. Where it's like, that's all like, you know, it's just, yeah, exactly. It's sort of like, you know, it's a nice, you know, this is going to be great, guys. And then you still have, again, back to kind of like Ezrin's final reaction when he sees Kalan Rayla ride off on Shadow Paul, is that it's sort of like sadness. Like he has a feeling at that, again, like there might be a while before he sees Kalan again.
Yeah. And again, it's like this, I'm watching my kid go off to the first day of school, right? That happens in the morning too, right? There's this element of send-off that comes with this that really is present in this moment. So that's the second step. We've kind of talked about this deeper meaning, the implied hint that is there. And you, again, can spend a lot more time on this if you do this in your own practice, but just this is the basics of it. And so we're going to move on to step three, which is drash. And this is asking of us, what is the, in the rabbinical tradition, it is, what is the sermon you would preach on this quote? But we can reframe it instead of that to be like, if you were to teach a lesson on this quote, whether it be to a group of people or to a child or to someone that you care about, what is the lesson to be learned from this quote? Or if you were to do it in a rabbinical fashion, like if you were to preach on this quote, what would your sermon be about?
I'll do it very quick. I think, and I try to do this exercise because I'm somebody who sometimes a little stuck in the past. And I am somebody who can get a little, a little sad when, in my personal life, we just relocated from Los Angeles, California to beautiful, sunny Denmark. And I already sort of miss LA, but there's a new chapter, it is dawn. It is the morning. And all this new adventures is right in front of me. So I'm trying in the morning to sort of, again, like have my coffee, as you said, and look out, into my, forget about all the great stuff I had. And, cause there's nothing to, you have to focus on the choices you made, not the choices you didn't make. Right. And so I try to focus on the choices I made, and the positives that bring, because no matter where in life you are, no matter what is happening to you, there's always something positive. And no matter what choices you made, there's a path forward that is right for you. And I think that's maybe like if I was standing in a church right now, I guess that's what I would say, is I sort of go out and seize the day and attack it full throttle with positivity and an open mind, and don't let sort of like the past define who you are, right? So like move forward and grow. Yeah.
I mean, that's really similar to what I would have said. I think the lesson for me is on perspective, which is like, it is very easy for me to be like, today is going to suck because yesterday this happened.
Yeah.
And instead it's like, no, like dawn is a good time for a reset, a chance to look forward rather than look back. And it's pretty much what you were saying, but I think the lesson for me would be on perspective, where it's a choice that Ezrin is making to have this perspective rather than to look at it a different way. Yeah. So that I think is for us. And so the last step of this, which is going to bring us to a close on this segment, is the sod, which is the hidden meaning and often the thing that is most puzzling. And what we do typically is think about, like, is there a secret that is coming to us or bubbling to the surface about this after our conversation? Or is there something that has been dangled loose that may or may not be loosely connected to our conversation about this? And so I'm going to read it one more time. And if something comes to us, great. And if nothing comes to us, that's also fine. Dawn is a good time for quests.
I feel we sort of, I personally feel we've sort of hit it on the head here for like, but I don't know. Yeah. What do you think then?
I think the word quests is jumping out at me this time around like what it is in our daily lives. Like, we are not living in the Dragon Prince universe where there are, dragons and like, but there are wars being fought and there are dangerous things happening. And Ezrin is again put in a position where he is required to take action, and so are all of the people around him. And I guess what is shaken loose for me is this idea of every day I have the choice to choose doing something for justice and doing something that is good and right. And I think that's what's been shaken loose for me, is that I have a new chance every day to do something for the greater good.
I like that quote, but it's funny, like when I'm thinking about the word quest, and the way he says it, it's a little sort of like, it's lacking seriousness for what they're doing, which is sort of funny. And I think he's also trying to make it's sort of like a lighter moment, and you know, not be too serious, because he gets the gravitas of the situation for sure. So he's trying to be this like lighthouse of positivity as a king, right? As back to what we talked about earlier, and this sort of actually taps into that, but it's also a little childish.
It's fair.
Which sort of hits him in the back of his head a little later. So
yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you for joining me in that practice. I want to bring us to our final segment, which is gratitude. And gratitude is a great attitude, but it's a better practice. And so this is why we finish our episodes with this. So I want to ask you, like, after our conversation, in light of watching this episode and creating this episode in your case, who is a character from the episode that you are thankful for and why?
It's totally Opelli. No, I'm kidding. Soren brings a smile and a joke and heart and just charm to the show. When the show goes dark, when the show gets very serious, I'm not saying that he doesn't have a lot of things in his own life that are very serious, but this episode, Soren is just delightful, and he's a character who balances all this seriousness when it's needed. It's definitely a balance, again, also as a creator, not to, you know, go overboard and make sure he's still a believable guy, but he's sort of found himself, which means he can be funny. Like he's not insecure in the room. Like maybe Callum is a little insecure because he's a little scared, right? I don't think Soren has that right now when he's with his friends. He's with his sort of quote-unquote new family. So yeah, so I'm very grateful. If we didn't have Soren, the show would just be so sad all the time.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I'm grateful for Soren too. I think if I had to choose, I would pick Rayla. And, you know, we see a lot of development for Callum and Rayla's relationship over the course of this season and what they truly mean to each other. But in this episode in particular, we just see this just overwhelming constant support of Callum. And it's not just of Callum, it's for everyone. But there's just this something that I crave in their relationship and the amount of support that she's willing to give him and the amount of grace that they give each other that I just really appreciate Rayla for. So I'm grateful for Rayla. Woo! That brings us to the end of our episode. Vilas, this has been such a journey. Thank you for being willing to have this conversation. Is there anything you want to share about plugging something, or if people want to contact you and you want them to find you, how would they do that? Things along those lines.
I think everybody should go and play the game, the Dragon Prince game. That's you know, it's an incredible experience, and one of the first, if not their first, multiplayer game on the Netflix platform. And it's the team worked really hard on that game for a long time. It's a great sort of post viewing experience, and I don't know, I'm getting a little old for games, but I really like this one, so that will be my send off. Yeah, go play the Dragon Prince game.
Go play the Dragon Prince game, and that is available on Netflix. So I invite everybody to check it out if you are a fan of the show, which you obviously are if you're listening to this. So check out that. Remember, we do have a Patreon that is BNB_pod, and we'd love to have your support. We do monthly live episodes for Avatar The Last Airbender. We're in season 3, and we'd love to have you join us. And you can get a little bit of bonus content that we post there as well. No matter what, thank you all so much for listening. Vilas, thank you so much for joining. And to everyone, until next time, be well and do good.